If you think you can't go from politics to the divine, Carol Gold and Steve Clark are about to take you above the fray. The only agenda here is to empower you to think for yourself, ask more questions, and trust your own truth. So now, the combination talk radio has been missing. Until now, Carol Gold and Steve Clark taking you above the fray.
Hi, I'm Carol Gold. I'm here with my co-host Steve Clark, and we are at Above the Fray, and we've been absent without leave for a little while, but we're back. The number here, if you want to call into the show live, is 814. Let me just check out that number, 914-803-4522. We welcome your calls. We hope you get in on the conversation. What Steve and I were talking about earlier and what we want to talk about on the show is, you know, everybody's talking about who the potential candidates will be in 2016, certainly on the Republican side, and now Hillary Clinton, who was in on the Democrat side and looks like the main contender, is interesting material. But even as interesting is media coverage of the candidates, meaning just how do they cover the candidates? Do they cover them equally? Do they cover them fairly? Do they come with an agenda? Any and all of the above. And so we thought that actually the coverage recently around Hillary Clinton provides some fertile ground for looking at what may be media bias, and as exemplified by how she is covered in the news through most of the mainstream media. I know that May 5th, I think, is the release date for a book called Clinton Cash, which is written by Peter Schweitzer. Now, in all fair disclosure, Peter Schweitzer is currently senior news editor-at-large for Breitbart.com, and Breitbart is admittedly a conservative website. However, Peter Schweitzer is a very credentialed reporter. He is also the president of the Government Accountability Institute, which has as its mission statement to investigate and expose crony capitalism, misuse of taxpayer monies, and other governmental corruption or malfeasance. He's also been published and written for Foreign Affairs, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, the LA Times, the National Review, the list goes on. And so there is a real discomfort that I'm seeing, Steve, in the pre-release of this book, and maybe it's best to start off a discussion with Karen, not Karen Finney, but CNN anchor Carol Costello, who said today or yesterday that this book that Schweitzer wrote that is due out May 5th is the beginning of the real vitriol against Hillary Clinton. What I find interesting and telling about her comment as a media person is she hasn't read the book. She hasn't read the book, but she's saying that it is the beginning of real vitriol against Hillary Clinton. And in fact, you know, I looked up the word vitriol. I knew it meant sort of hatred, but it actually means bitterly abusive feeling or expression. So how can an allegedly unbiased news anchor, who is supposed to be bringing us news and not opinion, decide that a book that she hasn't yet read is vitriolic against Hillary Clinton, unless no matter what the book would say, that if it didn't laud or praise Hillary Clinton, then the book has to be trashed, because really the agenda is that either Carol Costello or CNN is pro-Clinton, and therefore they're going to find wrong anything that does not keep her up on the pedestal where they want her. So what do you think, Steve?
So, Carol, I want to go into kind of an article that I read last week that addressed some of these issues that regarding Hillary Clinton. And the point was that a lot of the media knows that Hillary does have some damage to her. She does have some baggage to her, not only from the scandals, the emails, not releasing the emails, erasing the emails, the Benghazi story. The article I apologize for it because I don't have the article in front of me. The article that I did read in length basically said that the media is well aware of the issues surrounding Hillary and that there's a defense mechanism that goes up around Hillary to protect her as they protect not only her but anybody that has the same cause, which is the progressive Democratic cause. And the enemy really is not the truth, which albeit they recognize that Hillary is not truthful on many of the things that she says. But the greater objective is the election of Hillary and the election of progressives and Democrats, because the alternative, electing conservative, is the real and true evil. To elect a conservative and to elect somebody that is a Republican would be a greater damage and greater deceit and a greater fraud than actually electing somebody like Hillary. So the synopsis is what they're saying is that they're willing to accept the lies. They're willing to accept the falsehoods from the Hillary camp, as long as it forwards her campaign. Excuse me. As long as it forwards her campaign. So that's why you see something like, just as you mentioned, like this anchor Costello being able to defend Hillary without even seeing the newscast or the book, I should say.
Well, what I find particularly, I guess the word is congruent, meaning what you just said about the greater evil, meaning, you know, even though they know she lies and even though they know she has baggage, the goal is to get her elected and to kind of gloss over in the interim rather than any Republican candidate, no matter how qualified, is totally congruent. It's totally consistent with the progressive political means by which progressivism proceeds. And I mean it this way. Progressives have a philosophy that the means justifies the ends. That is very much a stated principle within progressivism. And so if any means justifies an end, and you have a media, be it CNN alone or CNN and many other mainstream media outlets, who, regardless of what the facts are and regardless of what the news is, any means to get their candidate elected, it tells me that the media has a progressive approach to disseminating news, which is that as long as they get their candidate elected, as long as they get the end result that they want, then to hell with the facts and what comes in between. If the means is to suppress the truth, if the means is to color the truth, if the means is to disparage anyone who questions their reality or their version of reality, then that's okay. What's disturbing about it is that the media shouldn't have a political agenda. It shouldn't have a progressive or a conservative agenda. It should simply be reporting the news. And so the other thing that I find interesting about, you know, Hillary Clinton herself said, she was asked today about the email that disappeared off of, you know, the emails that she destroyed, the 35,000 that she destroyed, and then the subsequent wiping clean of her server. And she was also asked about whether money from foreign countries, while she was Secretary of State, that was contributed to the Clinton Foundation, bought those foreign donations political benefits. She refused to answer both of those questions, both about the emails and the server and about the contributions to the Clinton Foundation, because what she said rather than answer them is that those questions and those issues are simply a distraction. Well, what's it a distraction from? It's not a distraction for the public who has the right to know the truth. It's a distraction from her agenda, which is to get elected. And since both of those issues create huge problems for her in terms of honestly responding to them, she would rather just simply say, well, that's a distraction and I'm not going to go there. At the same time, Steve, that she said that, one of her spokesperson, the spokesperson, Karen Feeney, for Hillary, for America for Hillary, said that the book that's coming out, Clinton Cash, is based on, quote, unprecedented disclosures, end quote, by the Clinton campaign. So what I take away from those two is, number one, when it comes to Karen Feeney and saying the book, she's saying there's nothing new in the book. The book is old and old news. It was just all put together in a single book, and that the facts in the book are based upon disclosures made by the Clinton Foundation and disclosures made by the Hillary campaign. Well, the more pertinent question to me is, okay, I will believe you that they are that they were unprecedented disclosures. But if those disclosures have revealed information that may be improper or even illegal, then it's not a distraction to pursue what those disclosures, where those disclosures lead us. We shouldn't be preempted by news anchors and spokespeople for the Clinton campaign joining together to say either that it's vitriolic to question it or it's vitriolic to look for the underlying benefits that may have accrued to foreign contributors. It's not a distraction for the public, and it's not vitriolic. But when they want to make it look like, when they want to get off of center, when they want to get off of the issue, they do things like that. They say, oh, that's old news, and it's a distraction. Unfortunately, Steve, I think very frequently the public buys that. And that's where we get into trouble. We allow ourselves, and I say we, I'm certainly not including me or you or the people who listen to our show or people who do their own homework on the news, but where the country, we, the country gets into trouble is that the majority of people buy those dismissive excuses and move on without thinking through the kind of analytical discussion that we're having here now, which is that it's neither a distraction nor is it vitriolic to question the propriety and the legality of both the actions of Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State and the Clinton Foundation.
Carol, I want to address one thing that I think you hit the nail on the head.
Steve, we're having trouble hearing you.
That years ago, how about now?
A little better. Go ahead.
Years ago, when the Clintons were in power, whenever the Monica Lewinsky information would come out or when any scandal would come out, it was a tactic that they would always continue to use. You were right. The information would come out, and that information would be out there. But the news cycle, because of the nature of the scandals, were so big and so large with the Clintons, it would take a news cycle. It would take 2 to 3 weeks to digest the information and go through the news cycle. But what the Clintons would consistently do is they would say after like day 2 or day 3, well, that information is already out there. Everybody's already digested information. You're here just to beat us up and beat up on the Clintons when all this information is out there. The public has already made a decision. And the reality is what happened is that more information would come out, more information would get leaked out. The Clintons themselves would leak more information, even the worst information, and the response they would come back with, but that information is already out there. You're just, adding fuel to the fire with already public information. The public has already moved on. So it's a well-tried tactic by the Clintons to continually do something like that. So it doesn't surprise me on that tactic. And the second thing that I find fascinating that really we haven't had, I don't think we've had any president that has done this, especially the two together, which is it's been a joint presidency, is that the Clinton Foundation, let's be just very clear, was set up as a mechanism for the Clintons to raise money for their foundation, which was really the foundation for the presidential library. They set aside monies for their library where people could donate money and build this library. And it's morphed into a foundation. It's morphed into a kind of a joint agreement between Bill and Hillary to grow this thing, and they've used it. Most presidents have gone away and gone off into limelight, but the Clintons have actually stayed quite in the conversation, and Hillary as well. And they've used it. the people who want to influence and get access to the Clintons and get access to Congress have used that foundation so people could donate, and then that has really essentially buyed access to the Clintons and access to the government. So it's really become kind of a nefarious way for people to donate money and get access, which has been like it's been unheard of in the history of our country. So I think this book is actually quite timely. So maybe it might be a compilation of stories, but I think it's people need to actually hear the story how they use how they've been the Clintons have been using this vehicle. Don't you think, Carol?
Well, I do think that, Steve. And while you were talking, something occurred to me that I actually never thought of before, and it was because of the way you were phrasing and describing the Clinton, the purpose of the Clinton Foundation. I did know that it was set up for the Clinton Library, and I did obviously know in hindsight that it was used for much more than that. I think that what they did was they set up like a government in waiting. They knew she was going to run, she and Bill. They had the intention when she lost in 08 that she was going to come back in 16 with a vengeance. It was going to be her turn. And I think they used the Clinton Foundation to solidify certain relationships. It actually appears to have had, I think, a twofold benefit. One, it made them very rich, which is what the book is about, Clinton cash. But number two, it gave them 8 years fundamentally to establish relationships with foreign nations, with foreign individuals of influence and power. I'm certain also among Democrats in the United States. It allowed them to probably construct the framework for who was going to have access in a Clinton administration, in a Hillary Clinton administration. And as you were talking, that's what occurred to me, that they actually used that as both the framework and the hub to establish and get ready to move back into the White House in 2017. And that to me, if I'm right, if I'm on this, and it's purely an intuitive thought, but it makes a lot of sense as I think about it, they're much more nefarious even than I would have given them credit for previously. And I gave them credit for being pretty nefarious. I don't know, you know, I met her once personally. Al Gore and I have a mutual friend in Washington, D.C. And he's a friend of mine for probably 4 decades and a friend of the Gores for maybe longer. And so when Bill Clinton and Al Gore first received the nomination from the Democratic Party at the New York Convention, the first time that Clinton ran, they went on a bus tour. And that bus tour made its first stop in Coatesville, Pennsylvania at Lucas Steel because they wanted to start at a blue-collar location. And I happened to, at the time, have lived in the county that Coatesville, Pennsylvania was in, and I was an active Democrat at the time. And so I received an invitation to that VIP event. And so that night I got on the way there, I got a cell phone call from my mutual friend with the Gores, and my friend said, give Al a message for me. And he gave me a message for Al Gore, and I gave it to him that night of the event when I met him personally. Well, I also had the opportunity that night to meet Bill and Hillary Clinton. And when I met Hillary Clinton, I made the wrongful assumption in my mind that she knew the mutual friend that I had with the Gores. And so when I shook her hand and was introduced to her, I simply added that my friend, who shall remain nameless, maybe his name was Fred, well, I'll make up a name, Fred sends his regards. Well, actually, he's the first and last name. Fred White sends his regards and told me to say hi to you. And she looked me dead in the eye, and she said, oh, my gosh, how is he? I haven't seen him recently. Please give him my regards. She said it with such warmth and sincerity. When the event was over and I called my mutual friend with Al Gore and I said, I did meet Al. I did give him the message. He laughed. I said, you two must have an inside joke because when I gave him your message, he laughed. I said, and by the way, I also got to meet Hillary and I told her you said hello and she said to give you her regards back. She hadn't seen you in a while and, you know, she certainly wanted me to convey. He said to me, she's such a liar. She doesn't know who I am. I've never met her. And I will never forget how seriously and how sincerely she communicated to me that she knew who I was talking about, and she was sending him her warm regards. So, I mean, I've never had much faith and trust in her, and as a result of my own personal encounter with her, and I've certainly never had an excess of faith and trust in Bill Clinton, because as a lawyer, he lied under oath and violated our professional code of ethics, myself being a lawyer as well, and because he was disbarred and impeached in the House of Representatives. However, I think they may even be more conniving and, as I said, more nefarious than I ever even conceived of before, given how I just had a new perception of the Clinton Foundation. I want to say one more thing, Steve, before I turn it back to you. You mentioned that Bill Clinton had a similar tactic of sort of overloading the information out through the media and then, you know, saying, well, this is old news. Recently, I've seen several writers, actually news people or commentators, saying that she's begun to proceed in exactly the Bill Clinton playbook, that that's how she's running her campaign, and that it worked for him, but it won't work for her because he has that personality that she totally lacks. She cannot look you in the eye. She isn't warm and fuzzy. She doesn't feel like somebody you'd want to have a beer with. And or play the saxophone, you know, jam with your instruments. And so I think there's a rough road ahead for her, and that I'm encouraged by that. My only real concern, Steve, is that recently a poll was done of college-age students, and almost to a person, when asked why they were in favor of Hillary Clinton, their answer was, she's a woman, and it's time for a female president. And that disturbs me greatly. Because Lizzie Borden was also a woman, as was the Bonnie of Bonnie and Clyde, as were many other people. And just because of a gender assignation is not a reason why someone should be president of the United States. And yet it seems that a great many young people, the same way people thought it was time for a black president who turned out to be a mistake, think that gender is a sufficient reason to elect someone to the presidency. And that I find disturbing.
So Carol, I have kind of an interesting twist on this. I was actually listening to a Saturday Night Live analysis the other day, and it was pretty interesting. It was with Horatio Sands, and he's very much a Democrat and very much a liberal. But what he made an interesting point was that Saturday Night Live, in its own ways, does affect the elections. And what they made the analysis, they were kind of going through the different parties and the different candidates, and the commentator said, well, it seems like really, you know, they've kind of really, Saturday Night Live has really given Hillary Clinton a hard time. And he goes, no, it's not that. It's just that, you know, comics latch on to their human, you know, the foibles that each candidate has. And because of that, it really, you know, you can really make fun of it. And it really becomes a comparison between the two. And he made the analysis when George Bush was president, he was running against Al Gore. And Al Gore, the joke was, he was just so stiff that anything in comparison to somebody so stiff, George Bush actually looked pretty good, even though they ate him relentlessly. With Hillary Clinton, you know, she is – the jokes are numerous because she looks, again, like Al Gore. Not only is she stodgy and kind of stiff, but she has a certain malevolence about her, a certain evilness about her. And so the skit that they've been running with lately is just how stiff she is and how kind of mean she is. She has that characteristic of being mean. So even though, for example, if you compare him to Clinton with all his foibles that he had, at the end of the day, people still wanted to have a drink with Bill Clinton. There was a certain charisma and a certain likability that he has. And people would be willing to overlook that because he is likable. I think Hillary Clinton, and I think, you know, the people from the Saturday Night Live said the same thing. There really isn't anything likable about Hillary as a person. She just doesn't have the warmth or the character that she can connect with somebody. So I think what's happening is that Deanna is going to be what trips her up. That there's not people can see through her or want to believe what she has to say because she just isn't likable.
Well, I think you make a good point because it has always been sort of a foregone conclusion that in the end, whoever the president is, that candidate on their way to the presidency has to be likable. the public has to like the person, or at least the image the person is projecting. You know, even if your politics are right on point, but you're not likable, there's a likable factor that has to be there in order to ascend to the presidency. And I agree with you and Saturday Night Live and whoever else. I mean, she just lacks that quality. For whatever reason, she doesn't have it. And it seems like the more she talks and the more she reveals herself, ironically, the less likable she is. The other problem is she's old. I mean, when I say she's old, I'm not much younger than Hillary Clinton, but what I'm saying is for a world that is changing so fast with so much newness and so much innovation, she seems to come out of another era. And I don't know how in the world anyone projecting that image of a bygone era or raising bygone issues or acting in a bygone way, a bygone political way, because things have changed. You've got you've got the Marco Rubios and the Scott Walkers, and you've got young candidates on the other side who a young generation or the younger generations can much more readily identify with. And so I do. I think, as you said, she's got a likability factor problem, and it will, in the end, no matter what she does, I think it could be her undoing. We're out of time, and so I wish that actually we could segue now, because I heard an interesting interview. I actually got to listen to Scott Walker this morning and for the first time hear him at length. And I find him an interesting candidate for a multitude of reasons, but I guess the Republican candidates are a discussion for another day, Steve. Today we kind of gave the show over to a discussion of the Democrat, the sole Democratic candidate as of this point, and media coverage of her. And I guess if I would caution anyone listening, I would say really do your own homework this time around, because there is a media bias. It is actually a progressive agenda within national mainstream media. And if you want to go to the polls educated and informed when the time comes for the next president of the United States, do so on your own. The issue I think that will be paramount in the next election is foreign policy. I think our position in the world and the safety of every Western country, of every Christian in the world, of every Jew in the world, will be at the forefront of our minds come the next election. And so you really need to be doing your homework. Just because she was Secretary of State, Steve, we've got 2 minutes. You probably want to comment on this. Just because she was Secretary of State doesn't give her a carte blanche to claim credit as the foreign policy expert. Would you agree?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there's, you know, people do their jobs badly, and I would say the world is not a safer place. There's been a lot. We've had a lot of missteps over the last 8 years. And she was a Secretary of State for a president that literally said, "We're going to lead from behind." And the world is, in many ways, has fallen apart. So I don't know how you can claim credit for that or say that you did a good job during that period. So I don't. Again, you know, it's kind of like the joke that she's been to all these countries. Well, going to a country doesn't give you credibility. It's actually doing something. So I don't necessarily believe she's been a great Secretary of State. So I don't, I like yourself, I discount that title that she claims as this great experience that she's accumulated.
I agree. I think her, as Carly Fiorina, I think, said, you know, she flies around the world a lot too. The difference is Hillary Clinton thinks that's an accomplishment in and of itself. So we'll leave you on that note. Thanks for listening to Above the Fray. Steve Clark and I'll sign off for me, and I'll let Steve sign off for himself. Steve?
Good night, everybody. Thank you for listening. And please rate us on iTunes. It really helps us with the rankings.
There you go. Rate us. Go ahead, Steve.
No, that's it.
Oh, okay. Rate us on iTunes. I'll repeat that because Steve's my tech person, and he tells me where we need votes and where we need likes. And so rate us on iTunes. It helps a lot. Join us again. We'll be back Thursday evening, 6 o'clock, Above the Fray. Until then, have a great week, everybody.
You've been listening to Above the Fray with Carol Gold and Steve Clark, from politics to the divine. Thanks for being a part of a new way to see the world. Visit our website at AboveTheFrayPodcast.com and like us on our Facebook fan page, Facebook.com/AboveTheFrayPodcast. This has been Carol Gold and Steve Clark, taking you always above the fray.